But you can't be a great moral teacher and walk around saying you're the creator of heaven and earth. Okay? You're either God, you're nuts, or you're the devil himself. Because you're walking around telling people they need to follow you because you're God. The funny thing about the Bono interview was that I particularly like the language that Bono used. He was paraphrasing C.S. Lewis's argument very closely, but he basically said, you can't say he was just a great teacher. He walked around saying he was God. That's why they crucified him. So either he's God, either he is who says he is, or he's just a nutter. I just like that term. He's either God or he's a nutter. Anyway, so by the way, this argument here comes from C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity. And after this quote, there's a sidebar. It's not really a sidebar. It's in the middle of the text. But there's this little flourishy, flowery design, and there's a passage that says physical expressions in worship. And it more or less addressed to hand-raising in church or that sort of issue. And it's about a two-and-a-half-page sidebar, sort of digression. And actually, I called Father Pearson and I said, I got a question for you. This doesn't really seem to run with the rest of your text. It's written in a different font. It's a different script. It's got a different heading. And I noticed that in another chapter there's this, but it's not in all of your chapters. It seems like it's a sidebar. What's going on with this? And he said, yeah, really, they weren't supposed to put it right there in the middle. It was supposed to literally be a sidebar, like, you know, over on the side and offset with a box around it and all that kind of stuff. And he's talking about why people raise their hands in church, why it's theologically sound, and it's a good, sound argument for it. It's really not something that I feel we need to talk about, because I think we're all pretty much on the same page on that. However, if you wanted to read that later on and look at why, argument for maybe, you know, talking to your friends that don't or think you're a nutter for doing it, you could look at that. It is nice to know that somebody who has like a sound theological argument is on the same page as we are. So moving past that, Kenneth Pearson goes on. He says, Mary wants to hold Jesus, not unlike a little child whose daddy is going away on a business trip. Harry Griffith wisely notes, when we find that which is lost, we all want to hold it close and make sure it is real and will not be lost again. Mary is saying, don't leave me again. That's passionate. That's a cry from the heart. And I think we have these moments when we're all like that. When we all have that moment where we've lost something and we get it back and we're like, I just don't want to go back to where I've been. Stay with me. But Jesus' reply was not, don't touch me, but rather, don't hold me. It was permissible to touch the risen Christ. He was not a ghost. Though he had a resurrection body, it is still a physical body. And Mary and Thomas and anyone else could touch it. He wants to be touched and experienced as the Christ. He wanted to be touched. He wanted to be experienced. But he didn't want us to stay there. Mary couldn't just stay in the garden. Jesus couldn't just stay in the garden. Christianity couldn't just stay in the garden. We had to move forward. The Lord who took little children in his arms has not ceased to value embracing those who love him. What a great quote. Christians do not say in the Nicene Creed, I believe in the immortality of the soul, but rather I believe in the resurrection of the body. Think about that. And let's draw this to a conclusion in terms of this passage here. What Jesus was saying is, do not keep me here. When we encounter Jesus in a special way, we want to freeze that moment, just as Peter did on the Mount of Transfiguration. Jesus was telling Mary he must move on to make himself visible to various individuals and groups, and in 40 days to ascend back to the Father. He was telling her that she too must move on in her work for him. That applies to us, it applies to her, it applied to the apostles, it applied to Thomas, it applies to Peter, it applies to all of us. It applied to the guys in Emmaus. We just want to stay there and just lavish in what God is doing, but we have to move forward. For me, this is the main point. This is the whole drive of the chapter. The present moment drives us on to the next encounter. That's what we're called to do. Mary had just called Jesus Rabboni, which is the way she had known him previously. Jesus is moving her along now in how she relates to him. The old relationship is now out of date. Something wonderfully new is now in place. The Jesus whom she had known became the stranger in the garden, so when she rediscovered him, it would be in a new way. The same Jesus wants us to know him in a deeper, newer way as well, in deeper, newer ways as well. That's just profound. I mean, it's just good, good stuff. I mean, this is a beauty of this book. You can sit there and you can read it as just wonderful exegesis, wonderful biblical scholarship, and it's practically meditative at the same time. You could sit there and just think about that and then start thinking about your life. Then it says that Mary's asked to be a witness. And it says there's two meanings of the word witness. Someone who sees or experiences an event. And then the difference is, or the other meaning is, someone who gives testimony about an event they have seen or experienced. You can see something. You can witness an event without going to court and being a witness. An example. Just before I got married, I went to have some wings with a buddy of mine, and we were at Buffalo Wild Wings on Bay Meadows. The place has since closed, and we were just about finished with our dinner and our drinks, and two guys with guns came into the place and robbed the place. And the ironic thing, going back to the very first thing about discrepancies between witnesses, my buddy worked for the state attorney's office. His girlfriend at the time also worked for the state attorney's office. We were no more than, let's say, 40 yards from these people. And the three of us could not agree at all on what these people looked like. I mean, to the point where I said the guy was bald, wearing a polo shirt and white shorts. And my buddy said the dude was wearing hat and blue jeans. And we had zero in common about what these guys looked like, okay? Nada. But because our testimonies had nothing in common, although we witnessed a crime, we were never called into court to be a witness, okay? So we witnessed, but we were never made to be a witness, okay? So, Mary is not asked to give specifics as to how the resurrection may have occurred. She is simply asked to announce that it happened. How is Jesus back from the dead? She's no more asked to explain how the resurrection has happened than anybody was ever asked to explain how creation happened. Our Christian witness today is similar. What have we seen God do in our lives and the lives of people around us? Most likely we are not experts in theology, but we do not have to be. We are to tell people about what God is doing. Now, he goes a little further and talks about how, you know, we can tell them about our experience, and then we need to talk to them about the truths of our faith and, you know, pull them through, because if you don't, then we can get into some strange, you know, misguided ideas. But initially, all we have to do is tell them what we've seen God do in our lives. Canon Pearson concludes each chapter with a couple of reflection questions. There's three. The first one, frankly, not my favorite. So we're just going to talk about the second and the third. Discussion questions. When have you encountered the risen Christ without recognizing him? Something to think about. Anybody? If I didn't recognize him, how can I talk about it now? Well, did you maybe recognize him a little late? Did you catch on after the fact? Anybody? Well, I guess, truth be told, anytime we encounter him now, it's the risen Christ, right? None of us have seen him pre-risen. None of us, you know, experienced the pre-crucified Christ. I mean, maybe we might have had a vision of him on the cross or something along that line, but really any time we've experienced him, we've experienced the post-resurrection Christ. So that might make it a little easier. I mean, any time we really experience Christ in somebody else, that's experiencing him. Anytime you know, there was a young girl who just got back from a mission trip. I think she got back on Sunday, and on Monday she gave her testimony about this trip, and she talked about this autistic boy that she was talking with or playing with. I think she was giving her, she had a CD. She had a CD, and this kid was just enraptured by the light playing on the back of the CD and the reflection in it, and seeing his reflection in it, and they were just playing with it and talking about it. And she said, you know, at a certain point I looked at him and I looked into his eyes, and he was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And at that point I knew that everything I'd thought about my life before was wrong, and I wasn't supposed to be getting the best grades in the world so I could get into the best college in the world, so I could get the best high-paying job in the world. I was called to go into the world and share the gospel. And, you know, that's an encounter with the risen Christ. Seeing Christ in a handicapped child is the risen Christ. And she didn't recognize it at first. So that could be an encounter with the risen Christ. The third question, how and why is voice recognition often superior to eyewitness and or circumstantial evidence? And how does this apply to your own prayer life? Anybody? yeah, the, you know, we need to be able to hear his voice so that we recognize him. But you know, it's amazing to me that on the few occasions when God has really chosen to make himself heard, not just, you know, quiet nudgings or, but, hey, I'm going to say something and you're going to hear it. And there's no doubt. It's absolutely clear. And those are moments that are typically pretty overwhelming. I can understand why Mary is completely overwhelmed at that moment. So I think when you hear and clearly hear the voice of Jesus, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty consuming. Just be thinking about those things over the next couple days. Next week, we'll be talking about chapters 2 and 3, on the road to Emmaus, and be known to us in the breaking of bread. They're going to be our topics for the next week. So...